Welcome to opening day, folks. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest and hardcore diehard Cub fan since 1984. Head out of the Del Real here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor, publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, and a bunch of other titles the gentleman holds. This is the 358th episode of our weekly therapy session. Again, we need it. And we call Investing in Bizarro World, and my God, it is. We're going to talk markets. We're going to talk policy. We're going to talk consequences. We're going to talk about what comes next, if anyone knows what comes next. Before we get to all of that, first and foremost, Nick, how are you, sir? How's you and your beautiful family doing? It's a bizarre world out there, man.
No real complaints, man. Kids keeping us busy, of course, sports seasons and all that, basketball winding up, baseball about to start. Yeah, I feel like Mercury's in retrograde or something's going on out there. Just in the universe is a little wonky. I told you about my tooth breaking the other week, got rear-ended, my laptop monitor crapped the bed. Hopefully that's my three things, but just weird juju out there in the universe. And I know that's minuscule compared to some other things going on there that we'll talk about. How are you?
I'm great. You reminded me to get my crystal out because there's definitely it's weird juju everywhere, man. I mean, it's left and right. Look, first and foremost, we're healthy. Had a niece that had a bit of a health scare and a emergency surgery, but that went well, and she's stable and recovering and thankful for that. But the rest of us thankfully are healthy, and look, there's a lot of year left, but we're currently in the part of the year where volatility is king, and we're seeing that being reflected in currency volatility. We're seeing it being reflected in the yields. We're seeing it being reflected in the dollar, obviously, now just about to breach the 100 level there, and we're seeing it in energy. So I want to start with volatility because there's different types of volatility. I wrote about this week for Daily Profit Cycle, and there's currency volatility, there's gold volatility, and there's equity volatility. And a good chunk of those are heightened right now. Although as far as gold goes, we've seen a stabilizing, I think, over the last week in the equities for the most part, and in the gold and silver price again, for the most part, with a couple of green days after like 9 or 10 losing days, right? But still holding that mark right around 43.59 as we speak. Silver still holding 67. Thoughts on the volatility picture out there? I know you watched that like a hawk.
Yeah, a lot to talk about. And some of it's fresh because we had a member call in for Foundational Profits earlier this week. So talked about some of this. In terms of the S&P, volatility is, let's call it middling. It's not as... or even nearly as high as it was when Trump announced the tariffs last April in the Rose Garden. The VIX is at 27, 28. That's about where it was during the government shutdown last October. But it is elevated relative to what it has been in recent months when the S&P was hitting all-time highs. You mentioned we had a little bit smoother of a week this week. I would say that's a counter-trend move. I think the S&P is short-term bearish, down something like 4% for the year. I think that with the VIX at 27.28, that allows four wider swings. So you get those up days and you feel good because they're really up, but then you get the down days again and you don't feel as good because they're really down. And that's a function of that higher volatility allowing for wider price swings. In terms of gold volatility, GVZ, it actually spiked here in the past couple of days. So if I look at the GVZ chart year to date, which I'm doing, you remember when we were in Vancouver together, had some lovely meals, went to a hockey game. Everyone was euphoric because silver had screamed to over 100 and gold was approaching 5,000. That's volatility as well. Volatility
correct.
Can be to the upside and to the downside. Right. The gold volatility then was something like 45, 46. It's done a head and shoulders since then, essentially, or a bat wing, if you will.
Looks like the mountains of Iran, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And you're getting back up now, actually, higher than you were when we first started the bombing. So when we first started bombing, gold volatility was at 33. Actually, let me just share my screen.
There you go.
Let me just get her done.
And I'm very visual, as you know, so that'll help me as well. Just taking a peek at it. And yep. By the way, I want to say your call in yesterday for Underground Alpha was absolutely fantastic, phenomenal. If anybody is not subscribed to Nick's letter, Just some very, very thorough work, both on the technical side with the slides, and just a great explanation from top to bottom of everything going on, macro and micro. So kudos to you, sir. I listened in the whole time and was fantastic as always.
Well, thanks for pumping my tires. I appreciate it. I was saying volatility was high here, 45, 46, 47, even and a half. When things were really good, that's high volatility. And then we had a bit of a cooling off. Bombing starts here, the 27th, headed into that weekend, the beginning of March. And yet we had a little spike, and this is gold volatility now, GVZ. It sold back off and really caught itself at support. Some people say you can't chart volatility, but some of these lines line up pretty good. Market was giving Trump the benefit of the doubt. Maybe this is going to be short. And then we got into this week, the past couple of days, and you can see here, as we started the week, Monday the 23rd, and then here into Thursday the 26th, we're back up to 45 on the gold volatility. Yep. And you're seeing that. You mentioned gold was down around 4,300. There's no reason you can't wake up tomorrow and it can't be 47, 48, 4,900, 5,000. Because when you get the higher volatility again, I said that a bunch, you get the wider price swings. Today was the scariest day yet for gold, you know, down around 4,300. The level is, 4,325, 4,330, yep, somewhere in there. If we go below there, there's going to be some trouble, in the gold space, but it has held there so far. And, it has a lot of tailwinds, obviously, with the debt, yep, and the political turmoil and the rising inflation. But those tailwinds aren't enough right now to surmount the headwinds of the rising dollar, which you mentioned, and the flight to liquidity, and the rising bond yields. So it's good that it's held. Other metals aren't bullish in the short term. Like silver is short term bearish, copper short term bearish, structurally long term bullish, absolutely. But you are inside a correction or a short term bear market in some of the metals complex. I'm starting to give you a long answer, but just one more thing. Commodities generally remain bullish. I don't know if you remember when I was talking about whack-a-mole inflation back in 2021, 2022, after COVID, when, yep, the CPI was spiking to 7, 8, 9 percent. And we had the inflation was going all over the place. Like, 22, we had some runs in commodities. In fact, oil and some other hard commodities were higher in 2022 than they are even now. And then we did the chocolate thing and the coffee thing, and we did the egg thing, and I was calling it whack-a-mole inflation. I think you're getting back to some of that. Obviously, inflation is being driven higher by the oil price, which is near $100, and then the strait is still closed.
Well, it's open, except for you might get hit by a missile if you go through. Other than that, it's open, though.
Yeah. And that's going into, I don't mean to laugh. I just, you know, try to keep it a little bit of levity in the yeah, situation we're in. So the higher energy prices obviously makes inflation go up. And that makes other things cost more, like, you know, fertilizer prices are going up, vegetables are costing more. And so you're seeing some of the softs go up higher now, like corn and wheat. And obviously meat prices have been high. So just taking a little breather, I think, on the hard side of things. And then that mole has popped up on the soft side of things. That will revert when it reverts. I can't tell you when. And obviously, given that every day the headline changes with the geopolitical situation, really tough to put a timeline or a forecast on that.
Yeah, it seems like every hour. I want to provide a bit of context to some of what Nick said there. Silver and copper being near-term bearish doesn't break the mid to long-term bullish trend. That's important to note, right? We're talking near-term bearish. As far as the gold price, a couple of things. Look, we've held at 4320, 4324, 25 level really, really well, despite the fact that we just learned that Turkey sold or swapped 58 tons of gold in the 2 weeks following the announcement that we were bombing Iran. On the commodity index side, $11 billion from the commodity ETFs was liquidated here recently. That's the largest recorded monthly withdrawal. And despite that, again, gold is still holding in there thus far, and the commodity index is still holding in there thus far. So the other point that you touched on that I think is super, super important, and we're seeing it with Turkey selling or having to sell or swapping some of its gold reserves, is that the first things to get hit asset class wise are going to be the most liquid things, right? And so when we talk about what has been profitable over the past 2 years, gold clearly is in the money for everybody, right? When we look at that, when we look at commodities in general, they're clearly in the money. If you look at a commodity ETF, and so it's easy, if you're needing liquidity, it's much easier to sell into that than it is selling something that maybe has been weak or something that is trending down or lower. So context matters, folks. It's really easy to see wide bid-ask spreads that can make something seem a whole heck of a lot cheaper than it should be. And at the end of the day, the market knows all, right? But it's important to know, and I sound like a broken record, what you own, why you own it. Is your thesis still intact? Are these companies adding value? Can't stress that enough when you have days where you're seeing stocks up 15-20% like we saw in the juniors yesterday, down 15-20% like we're seeing in the juniors today. That's becoming more and more of the norm because the headlines, you mentioned that the headlines geopolitically change every day. I would respectfully counter that they change every hour, and the people that are changing them are the same people. It's this administration. There's a pixelated image from the White House X page, the official one, of Donald Trump, apparently with his hand on the nuclear button. And I don't know who thinks it's funny to send our young men and women into, you know, a war that could potentially kill thousands, if not tens of thousands. They're talking about, you know, Iran's talking about having so many enlisted soldiers that they're prepared to go and be on the ground, and they're welcoming it almost. They're saying they've been preparing for this for decades with the million plus troops. It's beyond me why we're doing this. This is the most self-inflicted damage to our military, which is the best military in the world, and an economy that prior to all of this madness, whoever is dangling the strings for whatever reason they're dangling them for, bless you.
Epstein.
Oh, bless you. Yeah, exactly. It's clearly a Congress and a Senate and a group of politicians that have been clearly compromised in one way or another. And look, I'm having friends and acquaintances from both sides look at this and go, none of this makes any sense unless that is the case. That's not a tinfoil hat type of thing. It's just you can be objective and look at this no matter which party you're in. Or one of three parties, or agnostic politically, and just say this makes zero sense. We are depleting our military. We are depleting our treasury, which declared itself insolvent this past week. It was reported that, you know, the Treasury Department itself did an audit and said, oopsie doopsie, we have $6 trillion in assets and $47 trillion in liabilities. That's the on the book stuff. We're not talking about the unfunded liabilities that we have no plan to pay off anytime in the near or midterm or any future. So again, a lot of frustration from me because innocent people that are trying to do the right things for their families, for themselves, trying to get benefits, trying to make an honest living are getting hurt from farmers to soldiers, top and down. And it seems so completely unnecessary to me.
Yeah.
Sorry for the rant.
No, it's a great rant. That's what we're here for. A little bit of catharsis and therapy, as we say. And you can see some of the MAGA folks, or MAGA, however you say it, getting disenfranchised with their leader. I'm sure you saw the clip of the woman at a gas station this week that was going around saying, you know, she voted for Trump three times, essentially, 2016, and when he lost to Biden mm-hmm. in 2020, and then again in 2024, and how she must be an idiot because she voted for him three times. And I think she called him a pile of shit. This cadre of voters is, you know, I'm equating it to my personal experience and worldview now is going through sort of what I went through in the first Obama term, right? Where I drank that Kool-Aid, voted for Obama, market crashed, and people got hurt, like you were saying. And who got bailed out then? It was the
bankers.
The banks. Exactly right. And so, you know, I learned my lesson then, which is why I didn't get caught up in any of this political extremism that we've seen over the past decade, because I threw in the towel. I haven't voted for a president in a meaningful way since that 2008 election, because it's clear as day to me that they don't have your best interests in mind. I mean, I founded an entire multi-million dollar newsletter franchise on this idea, right? And it hasn't come to an end. We talk about the ekpyrosis. That's the culmination of the fourth turning. And in my lexicon or my worldview or everything that, you know, I've come to know and believe in my reading and studying of the world is, you know, we truly need to get a turning of the generations and get the next generation into power. That's ultimately what's going to help fix some of this stuff. Until then, there's some really bad decisions are being made. Some really unbelievable things are being done in terms of the memes and the tweets and just the logic of what's happening. And on the one hand, you can blame Trump and his insider network or, you know, his counsel and advisors and things like that. And on the other hand, you also got to sort of look in the mirror, man, and look at the voters and hope that they continue to wise up and get it, that there is no savior at this juncture. And yeah, like you say, changing every hour. You know, I've heard this war is over. We won the first weekend. Oh, it's going to take a week or a couple of weeks. Oh, it might be a couple of months. Oh, we need $200 billion, and I'm pushing back my meeting with China until May because things are too crazy for me to have that going on right now. To 2,000 troops, 3,000 troops, 4,000 troops, 5,000 troops, maybe 6,000 troops. It's like, yeah, there's no
boots on the ground. Maybe strategic boots on the ground. Maybe we fly some. I mean, if you fly them in, they're not boots on the ground, right? And then all of a sudden, now we're talking about maybe full escalation, and they're tweeting pixelated pictures of the president in the Oval Office.
It's crazy.
On his hand over a red button. Yeah.
I've seen this movie over and over for the past quarter century, which makes me old. I was watching the original Kings of Comedy last night with Cedric the Entertainer and Bernie Mac.
Oh, it's so God, funny. Bernie Mac, one of Chicago's finest.
Oh, that's right. Southside White Sox guy. Yeah. That's 26 years old. And I was, you know, I was thinking, like, I've seen this movie before, like after 9/11, I was actually thinking, I was watching the crowd in the Kings of Comedy. And I was like, man, these people are virgins, man. They have no idea what the world has in store for them for the next 25 years. Nobody was filming anything in the front row. They had no cameras. They had no 9/11 worries. There wasn't a war on terrorism. They weren't taking off their shoes at the airport. I was like, man, baby, take me back. I was feeling a little nostalgic. But my point was, I've seen the movie before, from Iraq to Afghanistan to Syria to Libya, and I'm thoroughly done with that. Back to markets. You're right. Gold has done what it's done. I feel like I've managed capital pretty well. Thank you for the kudos on the foundational profits call in. And then in terms of the resource sector, where we spend the bulk of our time and capital, I mean, yeah, it's a volatile sector anyway. We got pretty well positioned. And the last thing I wanted to say is try to tamper down or stomp down your emotions. And yes, know what you own, but also know, like, the price at which you entered it and when. Like, some of the stuff that's corrected or has gone into a bear market that's down 20, 30, 40%. I'm still up 60, 70, 80, 100%.
Oh, yeah. It's like, yeah.
Do you want to erase that entire cost basis and reset the clock to zero? Because you can, like you were saying. Things have run up. There's money on the table. But if you don't need that liquidity, back to that, right, that L word,
yep,
and you believe that we are in a long-term bull market for precious and
critical metals.
Yeah, commodities, right. Then there's really not much to do except buy dips and things that you think have value. Otherwise, you're just creating yourself churn and turnover and tax bills and the need to re-enter and all that sort of stuff. So like you say, sometimes my contrarian heart smiles. I find that I feel better when it's a bear market in the S&P anyway. Like, I've told you this before. I'm pretty sure I'm a perma bear. Like, so I obviously don't like the war and I don't like people losing money, but when the stock market goes up every day because of low interest rates and a tech bubble, like, that's not fun for me. I don't know. This is at least a little entertaining.
Yeah, it would and definitely more challenging, right? I mean, especially in the sandbox that I play in exclusively, which is the junior resource sector. And, you know, it's worth pointing out, and we'll talk about it in the premium portion of the podcast here soon, but there's stuff still working. A lot of stuff has pulled back 50% here over the past month. Absolutely. I believe you me. I feel it in my portfolio. I feel it when I look at a tax bill or I look at upcoming tuitions or existing tuitions and all of that. I'm not exempt to that. But there is still stuff that's working, and we'll get into one specifically that had itself a heck of a week on great news, right? A great last 7 days, despite the volatility out there. One last comment socially or societally before we go back to markets. It's if you all think it's a coincidence that the Army is increasing enlistment age from 34 to 42 and that a little weed conviction's cool now. I got a bridge in Manhattan to sell you guys, y'all. Like, I don't like what the dollar index is saying about how long this war is going to last. I don't like what the bond market is telling me about the severity and duration of this war. And I sure in the heck don't like it when we willy-nilly just decide, you know what? We're gonna be able to use some more people. If you're struggling between the age of 34 or 42, or you're just that patriotic, you can sign up now. And if you have a little weed conviction, it doesn't matter anymore. That gives you an idea, I think, of where this thing is headed. And I hope somebody in there, either behind the scenes or somebody that's at the table, is able to talk some sense into all sides, because it does not look good the way that I see it here as things currently exist. Back to the market. You mentioned copper being bearish near term. We talked silver being bearish near term. Uranium actually has held in there pretty well, despite the fact that we've had all of the volatility. It's one of the most stable commodities. It's been boring almost, right? We're stuck between like $84 and $88, it seems like. I haven't even checked today because I don't expect that there's been much movement in the uranium space here over the last several days. I think, well, let me tell you what I think real quick. I think that bodes well for future uranium development here in the U.S. and in North America and globally, as you see a lot of countries now making U-turns and pivoting on pessimistic nuclear policy. Now, all of a sudden, it's we very much so need it, and we very much so feel exposed and vulnerable to this little strait in the part of the world that we can't control and what that does for energy input. So I think a positive takeaway has been that we're going to see the acceleration of uranium projects, clean energy, and more receptiveness to permitting those in a more reasonable manner. And that presents a lot of opportunities here in the U.S., in North America, in Australia, in stable jurisdictions, period, right?
Yeah. I had a question about uranium in the call-in this week. The equities have pulled back along with everything else. I just pulled up the URA ETF, which is sort of the, you know, the benchmark or bellwether of the sector, and it's, you know, it's at year to date lows for sure. I mean, it's the lower now than it's been any time in 2026. The underlying commodity price held up, like you said. Energy is at the four is the first thing I would say. If we look at the sectors of the S&P, which I often do, even though the S&P is negative for the year, you know, there's 11 sectors inside that S&P. One of them is energy. It's up over 30% for the year. And then behind that is materials and industrials, and uranium is a material as well. So there's obviously a focus on energy. So that's one reason. I think there's also a focus on security of supply, given what you just said about the Strait of Hormuz. And you've got countries scratching their heads saying, oh, shit, like, I was reading about, you and I were looking at salt caverns a little bit ago. You know, in Europe, they store their natural gas and other things, oil and stuff in salt caverns, and they refill them in the spring because they're reliant on foreign energy, obviously. And they're starting to scratch their heads wondering at what price or if they're going to be able to refill their natural gas coffers, given that they're now depleted from burning them up in the winter to stay warm and generate your things. And also given that we're bombing the shit out of natural gas fields not just us, Israel and Iran bombing Qatar and all sorts of stuff, right? And that stuff takes time to rebuild. I think I read in one case, I don't know if it was Belgium or the UK, I forget what country, but their reserves were so low, like, the salt domes were in danger of collapsing because there wasn't enough, like, minimum supply in there to keep them buoyant or whatever. I'm not a petrochemist, but that's the article I was reading. And then contingent to the Strait of Hormuz and the war is, you know, the last time we got sort of a uranium spike was the last time a big war started. That was when Russia invaded Ukraine. And
that's still happening, by the way, folks. FYI. People in Gaza are still getting bombed. They just bombed a camp of people that were, you know, seeking refuge and food, and just blew them up. They just tortured a one-year-old and burnt cigarettes on him and made a father watch to get a confession out of him. Oh, they also stuck a nail inside of his foot just for good kicks. And then the Israeli soldiers returned him to the Red Cross 10 hours later and kept the father. This is the stuff that's going on. And I hate to harken back to that, but it's the kind of stuff that's going on in our world right now. And I just... It's beyond me, between all the Epstein stuff and all the stuff going on and all the ugliness of war, how anybody could cheer any of this on.
I mean, yeah, I'm obviously not pro-war. I'm a pretty libertarian, anti-interventionalist kind of guy.
Would you say America first?
Well,
yeah, everybody wanted to be America first. Why not? I don't think that was a bad policy.
That's not bad.
Even the people that didn't vote for Trump wanted America first. No more foreign wars. Yes, let's boost our economy. The critical metal strategy was brilliant. You know, sure. I mean, let's do all of that. Let's not add to the deficit. All the things, border security. I'm all for border security. Do it the right way. Do it in a humane way. Provide a pathway, right? But I was, for all of that, willing to listen to reasonableness, and reason, I think, is out the window right now. So back to the energy.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, certainly I wouldn't have been voting for another foreign entanglement without congressional approval that costs hundreds of billions of dollars or more. But I'm not in the big club, so I don't really worry about that stuff anymore. I take it as it comes. Security of supply. So you've got European countries wondering how they're going to refill their energy coffers. And I'm sure, especially in countries like Germany and Belgium, thinking, oh, man, it'd be nice to have some nukes right about now. Right. So the other thing is, the price still isn't high enough. I was listening to an interview from a Cameco guy this week, Grant Isaac, and he was saying that, you know, we really still don't have a price that incentivizes enough new supply to come online, and the utilities haven't come back in a meaningful way. And so all that is, just to your point, why uranium prices, in my mind, have held up where they are.
Correct.
And likely could be higher from here. So, but again, we know that it's a long-term bull market and what the fundamentals are for uranium. The question is, and it was posited to me this week, and I didn't have a really good answer, is when, right? Like, when do the prices go up? And it's like, well, when there's more buyers than sellers, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's it. I think that's a great segue right into the junior resource facing the volatility you're seeing in the equities. A lot of them settled this week. We saw surges higher, and then we saw pullbacks. But overall, if you look, at least my portfolio, most of it ended up, you know, week to week, ended up flat with a few exceptions. But stability on that front is good. I think a lot of the panic selling, as illustrated with the commodity ETF having the biggest drawdown historically ever recorded, I think the panic selling looks to have dried up. That doesn't mean that, you know, just like anybody else, you don't have liquidity needs and need to trim positions to make ends meet and take care of things. It doesn't mean that funds aren't going to get redemption calls if other sectors are not performing and they have leverage or exposure, such as the tech space right now, such as some of the other sectors that, you know, in this environment surely are not outperforming any of the commodities. But hopefully the panic selling is done. Hopefully, you know, the episode that we did last week, well, you guys were kind and wrote in and said as much, but hopefully that provided some decent context that, look, it's going to settle, it's going to stabilize. Nobody can predict how long this is going to last as far as the war goes. I can predict with certainty that the deficits continue to increase. I can predict with certainty that we continue to add to the debt and that we will do nothing to address it for many, many years. And I can predict with certainty that critical metals and commodity supply, the procurement of those will be continued in a very, very aggressive fashion. So while all of the madness in the world continues, there is a lot to like in the mid to long term. The thesis is absolutely still valid. The volatility comes with it. Things don't go straight up. A pullback sometimes is healthy. We're absolutely in the middle of one. Let's see if it holds here over the next several weeks. Anything to add to that, Mr. Hodge?
No. Well, I always say no, and then I keep talking. One thing on your turkey thing, selling gold, because I was talking about that earlier this week as well. I mean, that's gold doing its job, right? So the reason that central banks purchased as much gold as they had in the past couple of years, it was like we say, you know, gold's an insurance policy. And like you said earlier, it's very liquid. And so, you know, if Turkey's got to sell gold to stabilize their currency, the lira, like that's why the Turkish Central Bank buys gold. And so does it feel good when, you know, you get, I don't want to say dumped on, but, you know, when a central bank is selling gold and that's likely one of the drivers of gold prices going down? No, but at the same time, you see that gold is still serving its purpose. Other people will see that gold is still serving its purpose. And I suspect you'll get back to central bank buying once this interim or intermediate term liquidity crunch is over, for sure.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And again, stable, boring markets over the next several weeks are welcomed and a good thing, because hopefully that it calms down and tempers the volatility that we've seen throughout the bond markets and the currency markets. So, hey, look, hope for a boring next couple of weeks, folks. I don't know that we get it in the junior space. I'm hoping that we get, you know, a couple of weeks of boredom. And again, companies are still reacting to good news in very consequential ways. So I think we can get to the premium portion of the podcast, unless you got anything else you want to get off your chest, Mr. Hodge.
Only the Fed and the rates. So, you know, we were expecting rate cuts later this year. They keep getting pushed out further and further. You see the 2-year yield is at 4%, essentially hiking yields for the Fed, because they aren't going to do it. Certainly not before Powell leaves. And, you know, Warsh was going to get in there and supposedly cut, but he's really trapped now with the inflation going back to 3% and the labor market starting to slow down. And, you know, he's not going to be able to cut rates, likely not this year. So just something to keep an eye on. And another reason that the stock market and other things aren't doing as well, because before they were pricing in rate cuts this year. And now they're starting to wonder if, you know, not only might they not come, but there's potential for a rate hike in the cards. So I don't think you get that politically. Obviously, Trump doesn't want that, but that would be the prudent move with spiking inflation. So a lot to watch out there. Now we can get to the premium portion.
Well, actually, now I'm going to add a thing, because this is what we always do, right? Look, on that note, Scott Bessent is he's not a slouch when it comes to trading. He was George Soros' right-hand guy when they broke the pound. He understands how to manipulate currencies and markets. And the one thing that I would look for over the next several months is an aggressive intervention by the U.S. in the bond market, essentially QE disguised as something else. Because outside of critical metals, the other good thing this administration does is it does a really good job of marketing things and calling things a thing that they're not, even if you know damn well that, you know, it's the other thing, right? And so it would not surprise me if we see aggressive intervention in the treasury market, in the bond market, to get those rates back down and provide the cover with a weakening labor market to be able to justify the rate cut on that premise. Do I think that happens in the next month or two? No. Do I think if Iran is a prolonged war that lasts for more than a month or a month and a half, and we see $150 oil and we see the bond market reaction to that, and it doesn't look like there's an end in sight, then yes, I absolutely believe that the Treasury and Bessent have, at least he has the brains to get in there aggressively and say, we're printing the money anyway. The debt's not going to get addressed while I'm around. The bond market's certainly not going to explode on his watch. I believe QE comes in the next quarter or two. And that is, by the way, hugely bullish for gold by any name. By any name, you know, a rose by any other name is still a rose, right? Still a flower. So same thing with the bond market. And look out for that. That's something to watch for. And if that's the case, that's a green light for all central banks to get in there and really pile into gold again.
It's a really smart comment. And just keeping with the baseball theme, because it's opening day for your Cubs, they're going to have to frame the pitch before the midterm elections, right? So
There you go. All right. Premium portion of the podcast. Take care of yourselves out there, folks. I am Gerardo Del Real, along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 358th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. Have a great week, everyone. See you next week.
See ya.